Thank you to everyone who supports this show and all of the shows in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. If you're not already, you can become a Major Spoilers member by signing up at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, it's old school noir as Steeljack investigates the seediest parts of Astro City. There are delays a-coming, but there's still the 30th century Hulk versus Hulk, a zombie apocalypse, and something, dude, maybe eaten by a tiger? I don't know. Things may be strange, but you can count on the Major Spoilers crew to bring our A-games, our beehives, our sea monkeys, and our deconstruction. So E-E-E like a dolphin, and we can all F some things up, because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the air, G.
Welcome to issue 870 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. Of course, everybody is here. It's always wonderful to have Ashley here. Hello, Ashley.
Hello.
It's also wonderful to have Rodrigo here. Rodrigo, how you holding up?
I'm doing okay.
And Matthew, what about you? It's always a pleasure to have you here as well.
Well, there's an old saying in my family. Shut up and get out of the way. I'm trying to watch wrestling. And I like to think about that in times of strife and stress.
Yeah, they're rerunning a lot of the old WWE things right now on television, and apparently having massive success doing it.
You can watch WrestleManias.
Yeah,
that's what I was watching WrestleMania 32 the other day, and I'm like, man, these people haven't changed at all.
The ratings apparently are through the roof for those reruns, which is crazy. But, I mean, hey, some of the best wrestling happens at WrestleMania, apparently, so there you go. What's not happening, Ashley, are movies.
It's true.
Movie theaters.
You have to go to VOD for that.
Yeah, movie theaters are shut down. Movie studios are sending stuff to VOD. Sonic the Hedgehog arrived today. The kids have already seen Frozen 2. They've already
Onward
watched.
Onward is coming to Disney Plus in
a couple
two
of days.
Days
yeah,
days.
It's boys have watched it like five times already since we got it a week or so ago, whenever it was, last time we talked.
Whenever it was on VOD, yeah.
Yeah, let's see. I ended up watching Bloodshot. Not a bad movie. It's actually pretty good. But here's the thing. A lot of movie studios are saying, yeah, we could do VOD, but I think we're going to just hold these movies until next year. Yeah, we want to make $1 billion. So we're going to hold some movies back until next year. And Sony has taken Morbius, the Spider-Man vampire guy, Ghostbusters, and I think one other movie, and have pushed those to 2021. Instead of their July releases, they're moving them to 2021.
Oh, we got to float on that shitty Morbius trailer until then. Sorry, I swore. It was a really bad trailer.
Also,
it's Jared Leto. I mean, it could be the greatest trailer in the world, and I'm just going to be like, it's Jared Leto. I'm not going.
Yeah. And then, of course, DC or Warner Brothers has announced that Wonder Woman 1984 is going to move from June until August.
Yeah, that seems like an inevitability.
This is like the third time it's moved, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, like, if you sort of look at the DC slate, Wonder Woman is the only thing that they have that's like really, really powerful. Like, people love Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman was a moment. So Wonder Woman 2 has the opportunity to do that again and remind people of why they like DC, because Birds of Prey was like fairly split. So it makes the most sense to me that Wonder Woman's being held. Like, that's the one where I'm like, you're insane if you ever thought they were putting that on VOD. No freaking way.
And I don't believe Marvel has moved Black Widow yet.
Oh, yes, they have.
Oh, they did? Okay. All right. So
they
that
basically,
one has been moved.
They announced it wasn't coming out, but they haven't announced when it is now coming out.
Okay.
That's actually one that I think could do really well if they put it on VOD.
Yeah.
Well, and I
it
saw
it might do better than it was going to do if they put it in VOD.
Uh-huh.
Well, I saw
that movie
David...
should have come out a decade ago.
Yeah,
maybe.
David Harbaugh, I believe, was joking around on Twitter saying, "Yeah, this would actually be a really cool movie to release on VOD."
Mm-hmm.
Instead of waiting until another time. So maybe he's telegraphing something for the rest
that'd
of us.
That'd be
so.
That'd be dope. They release it San Diego Comic-Con weekend. It'd be a good move.
Yeah, especially when, man, San Diego Comic-Con hasn't made an announcement yet. So
it's not happening. Let's
Let's be real.
I mean, I totally agree with you.
Seriously, not made any sort of announcement.
No, but no. WonderCon was canceled, and that's Comic-Con International as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think they're hoping, just like, it was so cute. Emerald City was like, we gonna happen in August. And I was like, that's adorable. And I think SDCC wants to hold that off. But New York canceled, and New York is an October show?
Yeah. Well, they're hoping that, because the Javits Center is currently a hospital, or it's where they're putting sick people at. So, that place will probably be occupied for a very, very long time. But yeah, I'm really surprised that San Diego hasn't said anything yet. But going back to the movies, what are we going to see going forward with the movies? Obviously, everything is going to go back to the theaters when they can get them. Obviously, that's what Sony and Warner Brothers are hoping. But I saw a study today that was conducted, and it's probably not a super great study. It's still probably in its early stages and needs a little bit more review and maybe a bigger sample size. But they're indicating that people may not flock back to the theaters when the all clear is given. And so,
I mean, I think it'll take a minute because people are going to be cautious, but I think people are going to be so desperate for any socialization. I don't know.
What do you guys
think? I can definitely see the argument that you wouldn't want to go back, at least, you know, not as often as you did. I hate going to the movie theater as a general rule. And right now, I kind of don't care that they're not actually available, but I can see Ashley's point of somewhere down the line being like, man, I've got to get out of this house. But I also feel like I hope, you know, the Shawshank Redemption thing. I hope that they're going to take something away from this and that the VOD that they're offering is going to be successful enough that that becomes something that's part of their expectation, part of whatever revenue stream or whatever, you know.
So we've
whatever
talked
voodoo
about
calculations they come up with to tell us how movies are popular and how they're not.
So I see a couple of things that could possibly happen, and you guys can, you know, I'm going to bounce ideas off you, and you can say yay or nay. First one is we see that VOD window shrinking to where maybe it's 2 weeks after the movie theater release. Then everything comes to VOD. That's one option. Second option, and this goes back to something that Steven Spielberg was talking about years ago when we were still doing Zach on Film, and we had a very lengthy discussion about this, where Steven Spielberg was like, you know what, in the future, movies are going to run in movie theaters kind of like Cats does on Broadway. And I know Cats movie is probably still a bad taste in people's mouths at the moment, but the idea that a movie might be in a theater for months at a time means that that movie needs to be pretty special. And I heard Tom Merritt, I forgot his name. I've talked about him before. I'm going to look up his email really quick because it's Andrew Heaton on his show said that he thought maybe this is a time where the director's cuts, instead of being that VOD release thing or the DVD extra, becomes what you see in the theater, and VOD becomes the mainstay of the main movie, the one that you get, the one that you can get the day of release. But if you want to see the director's cut, if you want to see the one that has all the special extras in it, then you need to go to the theater, and the theater is going to have it there for a couple of months.
Ashley, you were interesting.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what you guys think about that one. I don't know if that it would have to be darn good. We've already had our one bad word in the show, so it has to be darn good. For me to say, oh man, I really need to see the Zack Snyder director's cut in the theater,
I mean,
as opposed to the movie
that
that's there
like,
on the
don't
VOD.
Don't joke about the Snyder cut, because then people
don't
find
even
you.
Mention it. Because they will find us.
If I say
they
it three times, will Zack Snyder appear?
No, but you
I mean,
know who
he
will
lives
appear?
In Pasadena, so like he's not that far from me.
A bunch of guys in cargo shorts who want to know will tell you. They'll show up. Trust me. I actually literally had to mute that word on the Twitter.
Cargo shorts?
No, cut.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
It certainly doesn't break everything up. It's fine.
So the other thing is, I really think that we're going to see the studios quietly going to that $500 billion slush fund that's sitting there and saying, hey, look, we're in dire straits. I know Disney made a lot of money, this last year. But can we have some of that money because the movie theater business and our theme park business just tanked in the last two quarters? And I think it's going to be a long time for the movie studios to recover, because they're either going to have a backlog of stuff or they're going to have to try to get the stuff that had to be halted back into production. And I think that there's going to be an absence of movies, of, you know, jockeying of positions of what movie is going to come out what weekend. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of independent stuff that's going to be rushed to theaters, but I think we're going to also see the movie theaters pull back on the number of movies that they're releasing each year.
I think that that might actually be smart. Because as with many of the models we've seen, as we've seen with the Diamond model, as we've seen with a lot of the things, you know, in the stock market and a lot of industry, people have been operating at an untenable and unsustainable level because they're like, well, you know, we're going to have an eternal bull market. Everything's going to be fine. Nothing can ever go wrong. History is already written. And from this point out, it's all gravy. And I think that this has shown that that is, I believe the clinical term would be stupid. But I feel like there's going to have to be some analysis of the way the movie industry has been operating. You and I had a very intense discussion not so long ago that I don't necessarily want to reopen. But there is a lot of that. How shall I put this? There's a lot of things that are being done in the movies because this is the way the movies have been done. And this is how we make $500 million on every movie. And now that that's not necessarily, you know, that that's going to stop for at least the foreseeable future, I feel like the expectations of how do we ramp back up to that are going to be less important than how do we just make movies again, you guys?
Well, Ashley, you're in that business. I mean, have you guys heard any rumblings through your associations or through your guilds or anything that have said, hey, we're ready to ramp this back up?
No, my guild is saying, hey, apply for unemployment. I know you can't apply for unemployment because it will screw over your application for American citizenship, but you should apply for unemployment. That's every email I've gotten from SAG for the last 6 weeks.
Oh, man, 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 man. So even they don't know what's going to happen next.
No, man. They do not.
All right. Well,
whatever's going to happen, the studios aren't going to tell SAG first.
Right.
No, but it would be nice if there were some rumblings from, you know, the Writers Guild or the Screen Actors Guild or the guys that haul everything around from their union, the Teamsters Union. It would be great if there was some statement that was like, hey, look, when this is over, we are ready to get back to work. We can't wait. We've got so many ideas. We've got so many great actors. We got so many things that we can do, and you can keep it all here in Los Angeles, and we don't have to travel, you know, into other countries looking for credits there. We're ready to work, and Gavin Newsom needs to get his act together and cut some deals for the state of California to keep production at home. I mean, I would hope that there would be.
I wouldn't count on any of that.
No, I don't think so either. Honestly, I don't. And I'm sorry for Ashley, but it's the unfortunate truth, I think.
I mean, the only thing that I've kind of heard that could come out of this, which might be positive in some way, is that, and this is something that streaming has been pushing the industry toward for a long time anyway, is that we might finally abandon what we think of right now in terms of seasons. So now, I mean, nothing's coming out in the fall, fam. No matter what happens.
Right.
So it might all be coming out in January.
Right.
Which could be really cool. You know, shows might just come out now when they're done and when they're ready.
Well, you know, there has been that shift, especially I think USA Network started this like a decade ago, where they made their seasons during the summer so that you could watch Burn Notice and whatever the other shows were. Because they were like, everybody else
White
is running.
Starring Matt Bomer.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. Everyone else is running reruns. So we're going to run our regular season during the summer. So we might see a shift in that. But I agree with you that if people are really looking forward for a lot of fall stuff, it may not be there.
No, definitely not.
I think that the big problem on what we're looking at right now is I think that everybody is expecting the proverbial paradigm shift. But at this point in the game, it's impossible to tell what that will be or when it's going to happen, because we are still literally at the point where many people can't or shouldn't or are being told, really, don't leave your home. So I feel like, you know, these are all going to be things. There are going to be changes. I think we all agree that something is going to happen, but there's no way to tell what that is, because we might expect right now, if, you know, 2 weeks from now, won't be the same thing. And if we're still in this situation 4 weeks, 6 weeks, if this is something that lasts into the summer, through the summer, you know, there are going to be repercussions. The longer that the actual emergency situation goes on, the bigger those ripples are going to be, the bigger the repercussions. And trying to plan for something right now in terms of a new paradigm or doing a season or, you know, how are we going to get everything back online? If you plan right now, next week, it's all going to be completely useless information.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the situation is so fluid that everybody is afraid to announce anything. You know, it's like Marvel has still, they haven't said, hey, are we getting comics or not? Maybe that's possible, because they I don't think they literally know. I feel like people are afraid to make a decision right now and have it be invalidated tomorrow. And that's actually kind of smart. That's remarkably thoughtful for some of these major corporations who have for a long time been all about, we're going to move decisively right now, and if it's wrong, we'll correct later. That's not really going to work right now.
Yep. I will be interested to see how this all comes together. I'm sure everyone else is as well, because we love pop culture and entertainment, and we love to be entertained, but it's going to be a very different world once this all is wrapped up. But for now, let's see what we can do for tomorrow and see what comics come out. Let's just get that far. How about we just make it till tomorrow? That's probably a good
thing.
Yeah,
really.
Right?
At 11 o'clock tonight, I'm going to go to bed.
Well,
that I can tell you with certainty.
That is probably not a bad idea, man. Honestly.
And at the point where I wake up, I will be making new decisions. Those decisions will be valid at the time. Right now, I know at 11 o'clock tonight, I'm going to go to bed.
Yep, there you go. All right. And so we can make sure that Matthew gets to bed on early, how about we jump into some reviews?
Reviews.
Why don't we start? Let's see. Most of everybody has stuff from last week. Matthew, why don't we start with you with Immortal Hulk number 33.
Immortal Hulk number 33. I had fallen out of Immortal Hulk. I missed a couple of issues, and I, you know, do that thing where I popped back in last issue with number 32. And the thing about it, there are a lot of characters in comics that people like to make fun of. If you're a fan of Maggot or Cypher of the New Mutants or Bouncing Boy, you know that there are characters in comics who are treated as jokes by the fans. And it's always wonderful when the creators refuse to play along. So Zemnu, once known as the Hulk, a telepathic alien from Planet X, showed up in issue 31 of Immortal Hulk and still looks like a big fluffy doll with a silver cap on his head and still has big glowing red eyes and a smiley face. And he is the most terrifying thing I've seen in comics in the year 2020. This is a horrifying comic book. It is scary. And the scariest part about it is that even though it's the story of two monsters jockeying for position, what it really comes down to is a psychological argument in the mind of Robert Bruce Banner. Zemnu has taken over the world. He has erased knowledge of the Hulk from everyone. He is the only Hulk that anyone remembers. And Robert Bruce Banner, known to his friends as Bob rather than Bruce, is a noted psycho serial killer that everyone hates. And so most of this issue's story actually takes place inside Banner's mind. Lately, the Immortal Hulk, who is very angry and relatively well-spoken and kind of like the Joe Fix-It Hulk, only slightly crueler and more cunning, has been floating around. But in the recent issues, the childlike Hulk is Hulk has come back. And throughout this issue, we see that Hulk and the shard of personality that was the angry Worldbreaker Hulk fighting their way across Bruce Banner's mind, trying to find a way out, trying to help Banner to escape whatever it is. And when they succeed, the Hulk literally explodes out of Banner's mouth. And oh my God, you guys, Al Ewing is wonderful. Joe Bennett is wonderful. This is a super creepy story. I don't want to give too much away because there are three huge reveals in this issue. One about one of the supporting characters, one about the main character himself, and one that's just creepy, creepy, creepy. Oh my God, creepy. It's making my skin crawl talking about it. But I'm not going to tell you what it is because you got to check this out. All right. Immortal Hulk number 33 is probably out there somewhere. If you can't find it on the stands, I'm sorry, but you should definitely check it out. Five Slices of Meatloaf. It is a scary, weird, just wrong story. And it takes Zemnu the Hulk, who is just this joke character. If you remember the She-Hulk issues where he appeared and he was this silly alien from the old days, please read this issue because it will make you scared to death of this fluffy, fluffy bear from outer space.
Very cool. All right. Also out last week from DC Comics, Legion of Superheroes number 5 from DC Comics, Brian Michael Bendis and Ryan Sook, retelling the story of the Legion of Superheroes. In this issue, Matthew, we finally get the origin of the Legion of Superheroes, which is very much we saved R.J. Brand. Turns out R.J. Brand is Chameleon Boy's mother, but we kind of already knew that from our Legion lore, and also the Legion podcast, the Legion Clubhouse, which you can find on the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. And so we...
Synergy!
I know, right? So we get to see, basically, Jonathan, is finally watching the hologram tapes that he has been told to watch these last 5 issues. He's finally watching those, and he gets to see the secret origin of the Legion of Superheroes and how the 3 of them came together and saved R.J. Brand, and then how they went to Brainiac, and Brainiac in this secret tape that only Jonathan Kent could see is basically telling them that, man, the future, the time that we live in, is in great flux because of things that are going on in the past right now. And I don't know if this is a Generation 5, supposedly a Generation 5 tie-in or not, but basically we have to instill in Jonathan Kent right here and now the importance of him being a hero, the one true Superman, or else our future, our present, is going to be gone forever. And it really starts to get into the metaphysics of the multiverse and what happens in the past. Does that really ripple forward in time? Those kinds of things. So the weight of the world has been put on Jonathan's shoulders, while at the same time, the United Planets are trying to take down the Legion of Superheroes and sending the science police after them. And everybody's just taking a timeout so Jonathan Kent can go watch the secret tapes. It's a pretty good issue. I enjoyed it a lot. I'm surprised it took this long for us to get to the origin of the Legion of Superheroes. I think it's cute that Chameleon Boy may have the hots for Brainiac. I think that it's very interesting how they're putting a new Dr. Fate in. And what's the one Legion, Frankenstein's monster or whatever? I forget what that guy's called. Something like that is the guy's name. But it's a very good issue. I enjoyed it a lot. I think it's worth picking up. And I'm pretty sure that after the 6th issue arrives on the Legion Clubhouse, Matthew and I will sit down and kind of just give our thoughts on the first arc of this story. But 4 out of 5 slices of meatloaf for me. Very, very good. Very, very entertaining. Of course, if you're a Legion of Superheroes fans, definitely worth picking up. If you have never heard of the Legion of Superheroes, well, definitely grab the first 4 issues and read what's going on and then pick up number 5. So that is out last week from DC Comics. Ashley, let's go over to you and let's go back a couple of weeks because this is the thing that everybody is talking about. And I'm sad to say I won't be watching this just because I think it's not my cup of tea. But, oh man, years ago we had the Tiger Blood. Now it's Tiger King.
Yes, Tiger King. I had heard about these events from a previous podcast. And so when the trailer came up, I was like, oh, cool. I know exactly what this nonsense is. And Tiger King explores the life of Joe Schreibogel, better known as Joe Exotic, who owned a crappy little zoo in Oklahoma. And without spoiling it, it goes everywhere from the animal abuse and cruelty that you're probably expecting to polygamous cults, to murder plots, to country music videos. And if you truly think that life is, if you don't believe that life is stranger than fiction, like this will do it for you. It's been trending on Netflix since quarantine. It's like the one thing we're all allowed to watch in our homes and we're all losing our minds over.
All I know is all my podcast friends are all just going gaga over this. Scott Johnson's can't stop talking about it. Justin Robert Young can't stop talking about it.
I just like truly can't recommend that people check it out enough. Like, I can't tell you about it without completely ruining it because it's so wild.
Here's all you have to know. Here, let me see if I got this right. Business up front, party in the back with a big old beer porn star mustache.
Yep.
Wearing a bomber jacket from the 1980s, Matthew, and singing country music while hitting a tiger over the head with a cane.
And trying to murder
someone.
I've
seen Billy Ray Cyrus.
He ran for president. This guy ran for president in 2016.
President of what?
Of the United States.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
No,
he was on John Oliver.
Yeah. No, it was a real deal. That's why I knew his name. When all of a sudden this came out, I was like, oh, this guy. So yeah,
if the
description of Joe Exotic compels you or interests you, then maybe this is going to be for you.
It is so captivating and it is so upsetting at the same time. And it does end on a very sad note. And what's interesting is even the people who sort of crusade against him, like everybody in this turns out to be a villain. No one is good. Even the people who are presented as maybe good people at the beginning. I just think it's the most compelling thing I've seen in a long time. And there's also Wondery is producing a true crime podcast series on him that I think has blown up because the Netflix show is around. But if you are looking for what's going to be the new Making a Murderer, the new true crime documentary that everyone in your life is talking about, like, this is it. And I cannot encourage enough people check it out because it's so crazy and so wild.
How many episodes?
I loved it and was horrified. It's 10 episodes.
How long are each? 30 minutes?
They're an hour, yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll watch it. I don't know. I just know that what I've seen of it, I'm just like rolling my eyes and going, oh my God, what kind of a train wreck is this? And then you find out that one of the characters in this piece is the drug dealer that they base Scarface on.
I mean, he's had five husbands. You see him marry four of them on the show, two of them at the same time. Someone commits suicide on camera. Like, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah.
5 out of 5. Do recommend.
All right. Rodrigo, there may be a new comic coming out this week. What is year zero number one?
Year zero number one is, in fact, the comic that's coming out April 1st. It is by Ben Percy and Ramon Rosanas, and it is a zombie book.
All right. Perfect timing.
Yeah. So if you were, for some reason, feeling like you needed to absorb media about a worldwide scare that keeps people, that makes people have to hide, then you're going to love this. Honestly, first off, the art is really good. I really like the art. The character design is really interesting. It's like, there's a lot there. Basically, you're introduced in this book to five different people, and everyone you see is very distinct looking, which is great. You know, you don't want everybody to have the same face, especially because in this book, very specifically, each of the characters comes from a different place. So you have like a Japanese man, you have like a Mexican kid. You have like an Afghani woman. So the fact that they all have, you know, distinct features and you can always tell who's who is very good. And in general, the art is very good. There's like vehicles, there's like monsters. I'm actually pretty well impressed by it. So that would be Ramon Rosanas's art. As far as the story, because you are in fact being introduced to five separate characters, you basically only get two pretty quick vignettes with each character, because these characters aren't introduced to each other. You just meet them, or we just see them omnisciently. So you know, if they were meeting each other, then you could use that time to develop both characters that are meeting, but they're not. You're just meeting each of them individually. And so you see kind of what they're doing immediately before the event and then immediately after the event. And then there's we kind of cut away to this thing, and I kind of don't want to spoil it, but it's weird. Like there's a thing as I'm reading this, and I'm like, okay, so the fact that we're following five different people during a zombie apocalypse, it's still going to be a zombie apocalypse thing, so we'll see where it goes. And then at the end, there's this like really weird sequence of panels, and I'm like, what is this comic book actually trying to say here or do here? It's very strange, and again, I don't want to spoil it, but it kind of casts everything that we've seen in that issue in a different light. So that's it. That's very interesting, at least. I'm going to give it 3 slices of meatloaf out of 5. Definitely an above average effort. It's worth it for the art. It does look like it's going to have some standard zombie tropes, but also it looks like it's going to try to go for some weirder stuff as well. So I'm interested to see the next issue.
Very, 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 very cool. Thank you for that, Rodrigo and Ashley and Matthew. Thank you for your reviews. And listeners, if you want more reviews and you want more cool content, make sure you head over to majorspoilers.com, because that's where it's all at right now. In fact, if you want even more than what we have over at majorspoilers.com, of course, we have all the shows in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. We've got your top fives, your Legion Clubhouses, your dueling reviews. Oh, what's going to happen with dueling reviews? You better go and listen to last week's episode to find out what happens to dueling review in the time of plague. Then if you want to find out what we chit chat about before the show actually records, then you want to become a patron over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. And at the silver level and higher, you get access to Conversations, the Major Spoilers pre-show, where we're sitting around talking about whatever is on our minds. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. You're going to have to go check it out. And I realize not everybody right now can do that, and that's fine. Other people, have kindly contributed, but I know not everyone can do it at this time, and that is fine. We do have a couple of new people that have signed up this week. I want to give a shout out to Brian Woodard, who said, "Well, finally, I'm getting on this Patreon, and I'm signing up for Major Spoilers and 2 others." So thank you for that, Brian. He's a big fan of our other podcast, the Critical Hit Podcast. So Brian is now on the board with all the cool stuff over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. If you do have thoughts, though, you can drop us an email at podcast@majorspoilers.com, or better yet, call the Major Spoilers hotline. Matthew, do you remember what that number is?
785-727-1939, the Major Spoilers hotline.
There you go. All right, let us get into some Astro City talk this week.
And, yeah!
Oh, man, from the very first page when I saw Steeljack, I'm just like, oh, Kurt Busiek has gone into the pulp noir tales of the washed up criminal who's trying to make it good and just can't. Circumstances are always drawing him back in. And oh my gosh, a tarnished angel. I'm going to kind of unload really quick. Oh, such a good story. Probably the best Astro City story that I have read yet. Tarnished Angel. Matthew, give us a rundown of what's going on in this tale of a young, not a young, but a very old Robert Mitchum getting out of jail and going back to his old hood.
That's true. For 20 years, Carl Donovich, also known as Steeljack, as Stephen alluded to, imagine if Robert Mitchum was covered in aluminum foil.
Yeah, imagine Robert Mitchum as Captain Atom.
Yeah, but Captain Atom wouldn't understand. No. No, aluminum foil. It's aluminum foil. Anyway, gets out of prison after 20 years, goes back to his old neighborhood, and immediately starts to fall back into the wrong crowd in the wrong ways. But in so doing, he also falls onto a conspiracy. And it seems like someone is specifically targeting Astro City's criminals. And as he accidentally sort of becomes a detective in the Big Lebowski style, he discovers that this may all tie back to an old disgraced superhero. And oh my God, it's so good. I feel like Astro City is so good.
I think every volume of Astro City that we've read brings a very different take, right? We got the Marvel age. We got the scary comics age, the eerie comics age being told in here. And this time we get the pulpy noir detective stories where things get really dark. And what is, again, amazing to me about this is it very much follows a Raymond Chandler-esque type storytelling method of introducing us to the, you know, to the We're No Angels character who's out of prison. Well, not looking to commit more crimes, but he's trying to be on the straight and narrow path and just can't. And every single, and I don't want to say every single trope, but all the little hooks that you expect to find in your detective tale, in your noir tale, are all there and are all being lined up. You know, the hero with the heart of gold. Well, it's probably tinfoil, according to Matthew. The young up in the plucky young kid that wants to do crime, and no matter what happens, our hero has to save her. We get introduced to disgraced heroes, as you say. This plot to kill a bunch of criminals in Astro City, the police who want to turn a blind eye, and the angels, the heroes, who don't want to listen and kind of want to turn their back onto Kiefer Square. And it's so good. So here's the thing. They do say in this book that our character Steeljack is based on Mitchum, which is great, but they took all the edges off, because if you've ever seen Mitchum in Farewell, My Lovely, which is a fantastic, fantastic movie that was done in the 70s, right at that time when, you know, he's old and starting to be worn out. But at the same time, when they're starting to introduce more of the actual Chandler stuff into the story, where the violence and the drugs and the sex are all part of the story, that is who we are getting in the pages of Tarnished Angel. And I'm just blown away by how gripping this was. And I loved it. I don't know about you, Rodrigo, but I really enjoyed this from the detective perspective, or from the noir tale perspective.
I did. I liked it a lot. I think this is probably the second Astro City story I ever read, the first one being the Confessor story.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And this story is really what sold me on Astro City. Like, I was down for the other stuff. It's like, okay, yeah, superhero stuff and an intelligent, like, cohesively put together superhero universe. I dig that. I was going to be into that. But this story really, at every turn, was a lot. It was just such a real human story taking place, right? It's really, that's what Astro City is about. You know, they'll talk about all these superheroes flying around, but really Astro City is about those personal stories. And this one in particular, which is not just one personal story, but the stories of everyone that Steeljack meets. Mm-hmm. Get told here, except for maybe like the fixer guy. All of these different stories that all flow into one narrative and make it just kind of all come together to tell this like greater story of, you know, fall and redemption and giving up and not giving up and you know, everything that you want out of like your washed up no good Nick story is here in the Tarnished Angel volume.
Mm-hmm. And the one that I don't think that they mentioned, but I kept thinking that Burgess Meredith was the fixer guy. That's who they based it on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's who I kind
you
of
can
think that they
see a little bit of Mickey from the Rockies.
Yeah. Ashley, what did you think of Tarnished Angel?
I mean, I don't know if I can say it better with more verve than you and Matthew just did. I love every time we do Astro City, because I feel like I get to see your respective inner fanboys come out and you're agreeing. And it's like, oh, my dads are getting along. This is so lovely. I thought Tarnished Angel was great. I've liked all of the Astro City that we've read so far. I really like The Confessor because Robin Duh. The only one that I that scared me was the creepy Ronald McDonald clown. But this is just, and you know, that's kind of the point. So there you have it. This is just comics, and it's superhero comics firing on all cylinders. Like, I defy you. Don't tweet me if you're this person, but I defy you to read this and not like just have your heart sing. Like, everyone who reads Capes and Tights, this is what we want. And Kurt Busiek just brings it to us every time. He's the master.
Yep. Michael Rookard on Twitter messaged Rodrigo and I today. He says, oh, Confession and Tarnished Angel are the best longer Astro City stories I've read. He says, if you're doing Tarnished Angel today, thank you. That, I believe, was my first trip to Astro City, certainly not my last. Yeah, it's a really good story.
What an eloquent comment.
I know, right? So I really, really enjoyed this volume, except... ..
My dads are going to fight now.
I'm not a big fan of the story being interrupted for the Mock Turtle story.
Oh, sure.
But the Mock Turtle story isn't actually an interruption.
It kind of is, because we're introduced to we're basically introduced to a whole other narrative and flow. Everything up until the Mock Turtle story has been told from the point of view of Steeljack. And so all of the inner monologue and all the inner thinking is coming from that. But then we get introduced to Mock Turtle, and he's like, let me tell you my story, blah, 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 blah. And it's not till the very end where, literally the very final panel, where you kind of see, oh, okay, I see how this is tying in. This guy's going to die. It felt like a break in the flow of the story to me.
The previous issue to that is actually told from the perspective of El Hombre. And we get that moment where he's like, oh, let me tell you my story. And I felt like in the context of the story being told, we start with Steeljack and his life, then we get the plot thickening, then we get that issue where El Hombre tells his tale, and then we get the issue where Mock Turtle tells his tale. I feel like, yes, the Mock Turtle story is further from the narrative than El Hombre's, but it's also very much locked into the narrative because it shows that Steeljack is onto something bigger than just, oh, something bad is happening. That shows that it's actually a conspiracy, an international conspiracy. And it's actually the first page of the next issue,
right,
where we see that he's killed. So,
well, no,
I remember the break in time where a couple of months had passed in the issue. So,
yeah, and I didn't know if maybe this was, if there was a interruption in the process of the story being released or told, or if this was a Free Comic Book Days thing. But yeah, you got to that very last panel and you're like, well, who the heck is Mock Turtle talking to this entire time? So let me take a step back. Yes, I agree with you that the issue before is El Hombre, but that issue is set up with, hey, Rocky, let me take you over to see a friend of mine. And so, you know, Burgess Meredith and Robert Mitchum go over to Zorro's house. And in Zorro's mysterious ways, we get the story of El Hombre, right? So that is a little bit different than the Mock Turtle story just opening up, and it is Mock Turtle looking at the audience and saying, hey, let me tell you a story about my life. And it's not until the very last panel where you figure out he's talking to Burgess Meredith that you're like, oh, okay, so he's looking for a job. He's going to be dead. All right. And then that issue ends, and then you're right. The next issue starts with Mock Turtle dead. I kind of almost feel like the Mock Turtle story could have been taken out completely from this volume, and it probably would have made for a stronger story. Although, when you tell El Hombre's backstory, it's a signal, just like every detective noir story, that El Hombre is the bad guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that what the Mock Turtle story does for me is it cements that this is bigger than just Steeljack. Steeljack is the part of the story that is closest to home for us. It's, the place where all of this is going to be unraveled. But that's the point where it breaks large, where all of a sudden, oh my God, we've discovered this, huge conspiracy. That moment where it seems like you're just working on the Anselmo case, but all of a sudden it blows up. And now Cyrus Redblock is trying to sell the entirety of Los Angeles so that he can, put in a freeway. I don't know much noir, so I'm just going to mix it all together.
Yeah,
into
no,
one
you
big
really
story.
Don't. No, but that's
hey,
that is kind
I've
of counter
Roger
the point.
Rabbit.
That's actually counter to what you're talking about, Matthew. Because if Steeljack is supposed to reveal that this is a bigger conspiracy than just what's going on in the neighborhood block, then the Mock Turtle story doesn't do that, because Steeljack isn't part of that story, except that, oh, and then this guy came in and saved me this one day. That's not our hero discovering that there's a larger conspiracy. That's the audience discovering that there's a larger conspiracy, but it doesn't follow into that narrative of our hero is putting the pieces together.
There's two reasons why the Mock Turtle story is important. One, it's just that payoff, right? Of like, hey, I'm the Mock Turtle. I've just arrived at this place where all the other characters are.
Right.
Next, like immediately next issue, dead.
Right. Right.
So it's just for that, it's worthwhile. But the other thing is that actually during the Mock Turtle story, when they turn away the chessmen, the chessmen are the ones that are chasing him.
Mm-hmm.
The Kiefer Square,
people think
that those are the guys that have been killing the Black Masks. And when they turn them away, they think, oh, well, this whole thing is over, and they're patting Steeljack on the back, right? It's like, it's not something that's very, it's not something that's given a lot of time.
No, it's not.
But this is important for later, because immediately afterwards, it's revealed that the Mock Turtle is dead. And that's a huge blow for Steeljack. Steeljack had been doing okay. He had been putting stuff together and constantly telling himself, like, oh, I'm not a detective, but I'm just going to follow this lead or whatever. And after this, he's like, I'm empty. I'm out of leads. We thought that was it, but it wasn't. Like, I literally have no place else to look for stuff. And it kind of starts this downward slide. And that's what prompts them to go back to Donnelly.
Yeah.
To get another job.
Which
right?
hooks him up.
Like a bad job. Right. Yeah. So it's Astro City. You know, it's a thing where, like, instead of like a character showing up and being like, hey, Steeljack, something's going on over here, it's an entire issue of 27 brand new characters, all with their distinct lives and motivations.
And that's what makes Astro City really good.
So that a character can say, hey, Steeljack, look over there.
Yeah. No. That's what makes Astro City good, is that we do get to see the lives of so many other people, even when some of those storylines don't go anywhere or don't have the payoff that you're expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like the fact that Astro City, unlike so many narratives, isn't afraid to be messy like real life, where you have these weird tangents and you're like, well, what does that mean in the greater scheme of things? It kind of doesn't all have to be wrapped up at the end. You have that moment of, oh, okay, well, that felt weird. And then it comes back around. Or it doesn't. And sometimes you'll have moments where it's just like, the only thing that did was make it clear that the reality of this, you know, bit character whose whole thing is to be a tragic figure who looks like he's going to get out, but nope, dead. That whole issue, I feel like, really makes the point where we don't even see him killed. We just see the chalk outline on the concrete that says he was killed. It's a thing where you get this setup and you're like, I kind of feel for this guy. He's starting to turn his life around. He's found a place where he belongs. And as Rodrigo has said multiple times on our Critical Hit podcast, that's how you twist the knife really hard to give that feeling of just complete loss and despair that, you know, you really want to hammer.
Yeah, but he doesn't.
I don't think
the Mock Turtle had a sad enough story, for me at least, for me to empathize with him. Oh, here's a dopey guy that got roped in and now he's out of his league. I kind of don't feel sorry for him. So when he does die, I'm just like, okay, good. There's a lot of problems with that part of the story.
Wow.
Yeah. No, I really didn't care for the guy. I was just like, okay, so you're a guy that can commit all these crimes and you can plan all these crimes, but you can't put two, and you're a brilliant mathematician and physicist, yet you can't figure out that the woman that you have a liking for is jerking you around the entire time. It was just a part of the story that I honestly think this entire volume could be better without that book, without that issue. It just feels like an abrupt, let's put on the brakes very, very quick And then when we get back into Steeljack story, let's step on the gas as hard as we can. It just felt like a weird interruption in the flow of things. Speaking of car analogies, is Steeljack in Abilene when he's in the back of that car on I-70?
Well, he's 20 miles.
I don't know what none of them words mean.
He's 20 miles.
27 miles from Salina. Yeah.
Yeah. So
no, is he wet? No, I didn't think it was west of Salina because it looked like. I thought it was east of Salina because it said Salina and then Junction City. So he's heading west.
Yeah. He's heading. Oh, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, he's heading west, but.
No,
he's going from Salina to Junction City. He's headed east.
Yeah, so he's headed east. Okay. He's west of Salina, headed east. So he's in Russell. Like, he passed Russell, like, 10 miles ago.
Yeah. I was just trying to figure out exactly where that would be, because it's like, 27 is an odd sign to put up. So I suppose middle we could just draw a circle around, I guess, middle of nowhere. Draw a circle 27 miles around Salina and figure that out. So
look, I grew up in that area, and I can tell you, as someone whose formative experiences took place out there, it's not worth drawing a circle. just throw.
Did you guys like the art? Did you guys like the art, Ashley? Did you like the art in this issue?
I did. I've pretty consistently liked all of the art so far, for the most part. I would say, I mean, if you know, COVID-19 vaccine in my head. I could rank them, I guess. But yeah, I liked the art. I didn't have an issue with it.
Yeah.
People not like it? Is this a trick question?
No. I enjoyed the art. I thought it was really good. I think one of the hardest things to do is chrome, is to do shiny things.
Yeah.
Especially when you're dealing with all the reflections and you're trying to keep
somewhere,
detail in the character.
Scott Johnson's brain just tweaked because you said chrome and shiny.
Yeah,
in
I know,
the same
right?
sentence.
Yeah, his daughter Carter just shaved her head and she's starting to look a little bit like Furious.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. The chrome, I thought, was maybe sometimes a little bit distracting, but overall well done, especially when it came to scary green light or scary other things that you want to reflect in that. But man, chrome is tough. And to base your entire story on a guy who's made of shiny tinfoil, Matthew, is a big chore for your art and colorist.
Oh, absolutely. And there are times when, you know, the production isn't quite, this is, you know, 1999, I think, or 2000. The production isn't quite up to what I would call a modern sensibility, but I'm also sort of fine with that. Much as with the storyline, I feel like you look at Steeljack in certain panels and you're like, he's kind of a weird, homely looking guy with jowls and freaky eyebrows. And then you realize that's the point. He's kind of a weird, homely looking guy with jowls and freaky eyebrows. And that, to me, really sort of sells it. That's the part that really puts it all together. More even than the Robert Mitchum thing is the fact that early on in the story, we see his morning routine where he gets the water boiling hot as he can get it, and then he washes with dish soap, and he has to scour and then polish and then chrome up his... And you feel like these are the bits and pieces of the things that you never see in other comic book stories, the actual day-to-day life of being a person who's covered in steel is really interesting. So I feel like, you know, you look at that and then you look at the moments of the art where you're kind of like, ooh, that looks kind of freaky. That looks kind of strange, because it's trying to be more realistic than you would normally see in a comic of this nature. Mm-hmm. Donnelly Ferguson, by the way, freaks me out. I don't know why. There's something about his face where I'm just like, nope. Stop looking at me, Donnelly Ferguson.
He's got that
weird
eye.
Stop looking at me. He's always looking at me, and he looks like Poop Deck Pappy.
He's seeing
like,
through you is the thing.
Yeah, it's just wrong. I don't want him looking at me. Stop it.
Rodrigo, thoughts on the art?
I enjoyed it. I think there are definitely times. There's the sequence that I don't know how I feel about it. It's like early in one of the issues. Him and Donnelly are talking, and there's just like, I guess, very little light. So they're both gray. And I'm like, I know what's happening here, or rather, I know what these characters all look like under normal light. But if I was just coming into this, I'd be like, does Donnelly also have some kind of like magical skin power or something? Right. It's really just kind of like minor things. Like, they were like, if you read some of the design notes at the end of the trade, they're like, yeah, we wanted him to look like paunchy and stuff, you know, like we wanted him to look like he was a little out of shape or just older. But a lot of the time, the chrome finish kind of works against that. Like if you see him without his shirt, because there's so many lines and so many effects going on, it's actually hard to tell what the definition of his body is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that's, I think, just a minor inconvenience of choosing to center a narrative on a reflective character.
Yeah.
I'm sure that both the, because Alex Ross is not the interior artist,
no,
right?
No. It is.
I'm sure both the interior artist and Alex Ross were real happy with that decision.
Yeah.
Brent Anderson does the interiors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, by the way, 27 miles from Salina, it's a little after the 156 junction up from Ellsworth.
Ah, okay.
Mm-hmm. So he either came up 156 and just gone to I-70, or he came down Wilson Way.
There you go. There you go.
It's 127 miles from Topeka, which means he's 100 miles from Hayes, give or take.
Yeah.
So he's halfway between us. If we both hurry, we could meet him in the middle. Buy him
look
beer.
Out, Steeljack! No, because no! They'll have to tell our whole story as like a single issue.
That's true.
It's just gotta be boring.
It'll end with Steven looking at the camera and going, boy, I sure am glad we saved the day. Cut to dead Steven.
It was like, here we are, the major spoilers crew. Next issue, dead.
Three really, really fat outlines and then one cute girl outline. It's fine.
So listen, I'm serious. If you guys enjoyed Tarnished Angel, if you guys have read this and you have not seen Farewell, My Lovely, where Robert Mitchum is playing Philip Marlowe, then you really owe it to yourself to follow up and see how much inspiration that they took from that movie and put into the look in this piece. Now, Mitchum did do The Big Sleep in 78 a few years later. I don't think I've watched that one. I know I've seen the Humphrey Bogart Big Sleep. But man, Farewell, My Lovely is definitely one of my favorite detective movies. And pulling Robert Mitchum into this book just sent it over the top for me. So bottom line for me is, if you've never read Astro City and you have a love of the pulpy noir detective tales, then definitely grab Astro City Tarnished Angel. This is a must buy from me. Ashley, final thoughts from you.
Yeah, I think if you are either an Astro City fan or a noir genre in whatever your medium of choice is fan, this is definitely for you. I think this book is just really good comics all around. But I think if you go into it having read some of the previous volumes of Astro City, you'll appreciate it a little mm-hmm. bit more.
Mm-hmm. Matthew.
I picked up the original suggestions, which, you know, I've been doing that since the beginning of Astro City. Doesn't make me special, doesn't make me smart. But I will say this. This is one of the better completed arcs. And this story is filled with so many, hey, it's that guy. Who is that mm-hmm, guy? I mm-hmm. want to know more about that guy. I think we get the first appearances of Starfighter here. We get Mirage. We get the mermaid, who we've seen all of twice in 35 years. El Hombre's story is absolutely amazing. El Bravo reoccurs here and there.
The history of the Irregulars, who mm-hmm. we've seen before.
Yep, the Astro City Irregulars we've seen, but now it's like, oh, wait, there's more? There's stuff going on outside of not just Astro City, but outside of the continental United States, which we had not seen to date.
Mm-hmm.
And this really opens up the world. And I feel like if you like you some comics, you should look at you some Astro City. And if you're looking for a good, solid, long form story, you probably can't go wrong. I feel like this is stronger than the Confessor arc in a couple of ways. Even though the Confessor arc has a more satisfying overall narrative crunch and has a more satisfying kind of traditional superhero ending, mm-hmm. I feel like this is a better overall story. Plus, honestly, anything that gives us Steeljack and El Hombre, yeah, that's a good book right there, man.
Yep. And Rodrigo, final word from you.
Final word. The Spanish in the Spanish newspaper is adequate. But love Astro City.
The best we can hope for.
Yeah, love Astro City, and this one, this is one of my favorites, one of my absolute favorites, Astro City stories. So definitely pick it up if you can.
Very, very good. All right, everybody, there you go. In a time when there are no comics to really talk about, we had plenty of comics to talk about, and we'll be back next week to talk more comics, because that's where we're going to wrap it up for this issue. Thank you for listening and being part of the Major Spoilers experience.
We want to hear your feedback, so use the comment section at Major Spoilers to share your thoughts and reactions to this Astro City episode.
Or even better, you can send us an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com.
And don't forget, you can support this show and everything we do by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
We will be back next week with Bond, James Bond, because we know that you love comics, and we do too, and we will talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm gonna rearrange your face if you continue to debate whether Logan's claws could pierce Steve Rogers' shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven.
This podcast is copyright 2020 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.